Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, and podcasts of prior programs are also available on either of those sites, as well as many streaming services and the WDIY app. Today is December 11th, 2024. The markets were mixed today, with the Dow closing down at 44,148, the NASDAQ at 20,034, and the S&P up at 6,084. Tonight, navigating life's transitions. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Bob and Cindy are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number again is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and they'll write it down and bring it in to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, tonight, navigating life's transitions. So this really is kind of just observations I've made over the years working with people, things that you need to pay attention to. Often I will speak with people, particularly when they're ready to retire. It always seems like that's when people are more interested in being engaged in their financial life and their financial decisions. And quite often you'll hear me say things like, you're in a period of transition, you're in a period of transition, because sometimes you have to give yourself a little bit of leeway and room when you are, navigating a change in your life. And there's various things you need to be aware of. Of course, as I say at the end of every show, be proactive, not reactive. I think it's really important if you understand and expect that you're going to be having a transition, that you are in front of it. And so I thought I would kind of break this out into like four categories. And that would be, just kind of life transitions, job transitions, retirement, which is really different than a job transition. It's somewhat a job. You're transitioning out of a job, but retirement itself is a transition. And of course, end of life type of transitions that one experiences, either, anticipating it for themselves or for a loved one and having to navigate that. So let's start with life transitions. And I could start from birth, but I'm going to, go forward a little bit and talk about becoming an adult. There may or may not be listeners who are in their teens listening, but there may be parents who are listening who may want to kind of, take down some notes or pay attention to this or mention it to your children, some things they need to pay attention to as they're navigating going into adulthood. I've heard a number of times from my own children who are definitely adults now saying, they don't like adulting, as the term goes, because you have to start, being responsible and thinking about the things that, prior were already taken care of for you. Sometimes those transitions involve understanding what you might have as a young adult as far as either assets that you may have or debts that you may end up taking. And what do I mean by that? You may be someone where a parent or a grandparent may have set up an account for you where they put money into it annually They might have gifted money to you. Before we had college savings accounts, which are called college 529 accounts, and quite often when grandparents are gifting to grandchildren, we see them putting those funds in those college education accounts now, the 529 accounts. But prior to those being available, or maybe you're not inclined to go to college and your grandparents understood that, they may have put money into what we call a custodial account or a Uniform Trust for Minors Act, an UTMA account. And going way, way back, we called them an UGMA account, Uniform Gift to Minors Act. So when someone has gifted money to a minor, it goes into what we call a custodial account. And generally, a parent is going to be the custodian, or that grandparent may be a custodian. So parents can also set up these accounts. Many, many years ago, what happened is you might have had wealthier parents or grandparents setting these accounts up to try to avoid income tax if the parents were in a higher tax bracket. And they would gift money to their children. The children would have the money invested. They would have interest and dividends and or capital gains on those accounts. And they would remove, in essence, that income from the parents' tax return. It would be on the kids' tax return. It would be at a lower tax rate. And it was all hunky-dory. Then the IRS caught on to this, and now they have something called a kiddie tax, which is typically if the investment income for the child is over a certain threshold, it actually gets taxed at the parents' tax rates. So I feel like that also kind of took people away from funding UTMA accounts or the custodial accounts because there wasn't as many tax advantages to that. The other issue that we found happened with those is once the child transitions into college life and wants to go to college and they're filing perhaps the FAFSA form for financial aid, the assets owned in the children's name or that the child had access to, including those custodial accounts, would be a resource for that student, and it may have hurt their ability to get, you know, maybe financial aid for need-based reasons. So, you know, a lot of things went out of, you know, boxes weren't checked anymore to have those custodial accounts. But you have to be aware of it if they are available. Once you become an adult, depending on what state you live in, whether it's 18 or 21, those assets usually become that child's. Now, the custodian may do other things with it. They may not even tell you about it. You may not even know. They might have asked, you know, mom or dad for your social security number when you were born, and they set up this account unbeknownst to you. But typically, those custodial accounts are in your social security number. So be aware of that. If you're working, you're a young person, you start working, again, a little bit of a transition, you may have the means to take the earnings that you have and save them. If your parents are still supporting you in such a way that you have extra money, you could fund a Roth IRA account. These are some of the kinds of things you want to pay attention to, because when I talk about transitions into jobs, into retirement, it's going to be really important how you establish your base, I would say assets, but not just base assets, your discipline around saving, your discipline around saving for retirement and investing and learning about investing. The sooner you can do it, the further ahead you're going to be. When you hear people talk about compounding is your money makes money. So the more money you make makes money. If I told you, oh, you could get a 25% return on your dollar's only worth $1.25. It doesn't sound like very much. But if I said you have $4 million and you're going to get a 25% rate of return, in my head, that's like $1 million. That sounds like a much better, you know, dollars amount. So the more money you have, those kinds of, you know, numbers are compounding. They make a much bigger difference. So the sooner you start saving, the better. So UTMA accounts becoming an adult, you might want to think about Roth IRAs that grows income tax-free. You have to have earnings. You don't get a deduction today, but it can grow income tax-free, and you can always get out your original amount. And of course, you may be responsible for paying for your own college, which would mean you might have to take out loans, and you want to understand how those loans work. How much are they costing? Put it in an Excel spreadsheet. Could you take out short-term loans and pay them off as you go? Work while you go to college, perhaps. All part of the decision-making. in becoming an adult. Folks, we are at our first break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about navigating life's transitions. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy, and she'll write it down and bring it in. We're talking about transitions, and we're starting with life transitions, becoming an adult, of course, you know, hopefully going to college or some trade school, looking for a profession that perhaps would, you know, be able to sustain your, you know, cash needs and life goals. Which then takes us to relationships, another stage in life transitions. All of a sudden, you know, you meet someone, you're head over heels, and now you have to navigate a new relationship, a new person. What are the expectations? Do you talk about it? I highly recommend you talk about these transitions that could be expected as you move into a relationship, as far as what would the expectations be of, you know, working, both people working, one person working, having children, where are you going to live? You know, how are you going to save? How are you going to spend? Does one seem to be a spender and the other one a saver? Does one want children, the other one not want children? Super, super important to understand and have those expectations and have those discussions prior to, you know, going into a really serious relationship, because that could cause another transition if you end up, you know, moving forward, getting married perhaps, and, you know, even having children, and all of a sudden someone says, no, this isn't what I wanted anymore. So make sure, or not having children, and you find out one wanted and the other one didn't. So as you traverse those, you know, relationships, that also has an impact on, you know, decisions further along. We had a question come in from Grace off air, Grace in Nazareth. Grace, thank you for calling in. She said 529s versus gifts for a child going to college. Better to put 529 or gift directly. Grace, this is a great question. 529s, as I mentioned, are college savings accounts. And why we love those is because when you put money into a 529, it can grow, be invested and grow income tax free as long as it's used for qualified education expenses. So the sooner that we can start those, the better they will be, because they will hopefully, historically, they will be invested and they'll grow income tax free as long as, again, used for qualified education expenses. The earlier, the better. Now, in this situation of what you're talking about, gifts for child going to college, or better to give a gift directly, is telling me that this child may actually already be in college. If they're already in college, there still could be a couple different options for you. You may not get the same growth on the 529 if, you know, you put the money in and they have to take it right back out. But as certain states allow a deduction for contributions made to a 529, if you have taxable income in, you know, if, and I'll use Pennsylvania as an example because they have very broad guidelines on this, you could actually get a deduction for the contribution to the 529 on your Pennsylvania return. It's not a deduction for federal purposes, but it's a deduction for Pennsylvania purposes. So you may benefit from that by putting money in the 529. It might sit there for a month, 2 months, 10 months. And then if taken out for qualified education expenses, if it had grown at all, there would not be any income tax on that growth. and you also got a deduction for it. So that's pretty good. And that's up to the annual exemption amount of $18,000 that any one individual can give to any one individual. But it would be in the 529 account for the beneficiary of that student. That would be the student. And you'd have to have their Social Security number to report on your tax return. Sometimes people might not want to give the Social Security number if it's maybe for a niece or a nephew or something. So you may not be inclined to make a contribution to a 529. And Grace, that could be to anybody. That could be, you know, the parent could have the 529 for the child. You still could make the contribution directly to the 529 and get the deduction, just so you know. It doesn't have, you wouldn't write the check to the parent to deposit. You would make the check directly to the 529 to get the deduction. But you could also make the gift directly to the school. And that applies to tuition payments. And then it's not even considered a gift. So the annual gift amount is, as I said, $18,000. Technically, you could put $18,000 into a 529 account in Pennsylvania, in my story. And as long as you have $18,000 of income, you could get that deduction. You could also make a contribution to the school directly if it's for tuition. Let's pretend the tuition is $20,000 and you love this kid so much, it's your favorite grandchild. You could make a $20,000 check directly to the university for tuition. It's not considered a gift. And then you could still fund the 529 for $18,000. That could be used for room and board. So the 529 has pretty broad descriptors for the qualified education expenses. For the gifting directly to an institution to not have it count as a gift, it's for tuition. And so those are kind of the differences, Grace. I hope that helps. So if someone wanted to gift more than the annual amount, I would say you could make a tuition payment to the school directly. Doesn't count. And that way you can still do some other gifting. But the 529s are a great savings tool for particularly for the long-term funding. And the 529s can also be used for private school tuition, elementary and secondary, but not more than $10,000. But once you get to the college level, if tuition's $60,000, you can use the 529 for $60,000. So it all kind of depends on where they go, but much broader criteria for the qualified education expenses at the college level. Grace, thank you for calling in with that question. When we're talking about transition, so we go from becoming an adult, getting into a relationship, understanding the expectations, how are we going to spend, how are we going to save? I always say watch and see what they order at the restaurant, see if they have balances on their credit card. You know, you have to kind of vet these things out, you know, peel back the onion to find out if this is going to be a sustainable long-term relationship. Then you decide, okay, we're going to move forward with this person. We're going to start a family. We become a couple. How are you going to combine households? How are you going to share expenses? That always astounds me. I have couples that I see keep expenses separate. Some, you know, the one spouse pays, you know, utilities, the other spouse pays the mortgage or vice versa. And one buys the groceries and they have separate bank accounts. It's just very interesting. I mean, I've been with my husband since I was 17, and I think we had a checking account a year later and have always combined everything, never even thought about separating anything. So you might want to have those kind of conversations. Who's going to be responsible? Is it all going to be combined? Are you going to keep things separate? Could be really important if one spouse comes in with big assets and the other one doesn't, because that could be something you very carefully want to navigate, particularly, you know, maybe with a lawyer. If you need to keep assets separate because maybe you're going into a marriage, what if you get divorced? You know, are there going to be, you know, marital assets? You don't want to talk about divorce before you get married, but, you know, just keep in mind in this day and age, you might want to just be careful. Nothing wrong with, you know, kind of keeping some assets separate. You can still put them as a beneficiary on those assets or a transfer on death on those assets. Understand how you're going to combine assets, how you're going to combine households, who's going to have what responsibilities, And then also having children, and perhaps there's blended families with children from other marriages. So I'll talk about that in just a minute. We are at our second break. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about navigating life's transitions. We can take your questions live on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and Bob will bring it in. My first category of transitions, I'm also going to talk about job, retirement, and basically death. Life, family, I mentioned blended families, having those conversations. It's always better to have the conversations ahead of, you know, circumstances that may be changing so that you can navigate them together. Open conversations to me is always better than, you know, sweeping things under the rug and not talking about them. Understand how you plan to, you know, raise your children, or if it's a blended family, how do you plan to, you know, share assets or split assets or divide assets in the event something happens to one spouse over the other. Sometimes you have children from, you know, prior relationships. Sometimes you have one together. Sometimes, you know, it's one has and the other one doesn't. So you just want to make sure you're navigating. And I think like life insurance and using trust is a great, you know, kind of help in all of that, and working with an attorney to make sure that you have that covered. Lots of options there. Totally doable. Then another life transition could be now, you know, you've grown up, you've become the adult, you start a family, you're raising your own children. And then what happens? We have parents who may need help, parents who may not need any help and who are helping us. Parents may still be helping children, adult children, see it all the time. But there are times when now the adult children have to help the parents. So you know, not that you ever have to count on an inheritance. I tell people don't ever count on an inheritance. Don't plan for an inheritance. But you might want to be aware of it as far as informing your own estate planning or informing your parents' estate planning. I've seen circumstances where maybe the adult children don't need any money. They don't need it. They don't want it. You know, they would rather it pass down to their other children or pass down or pass across to their siblings. That's why it's kind of important to know and have these kind of conversations. I'm going to talk about that next week, actually, having kind of family conversations about financial situation. Or if there is, you know, the parents are in hardship, then, you know, might the adult children need to help those parents and have the ability to do so? I have seen too many circumstances where I see parents sacrifice their own, you know, living lifestyle, I should say, to help fund their adult children who maybe can't seem to get it together. And in the end, those same parents who, you know, did so much for the children don't have the resources that they otherwise would have had they not done that. And sometimes those same kids, you know, who maybe couldn't handle money, you know, 20 years ago, they can't handle money now either. And they're not in a position to help you. And sometimes they're not even in a position to help you financially. They're not in a position to help you even emotionally or physically, or, you know, helping you move or put you, you know, somewhere where you can get the care you need. So just be very careful about those kinds of life transitions. you really need to take care of yourself first, and your children might just have to figure it out. So be aware of that. The reason I mentioned about the inheritance, because there could be adult children who don't need it, and why next week I will talk about this, why it's sometimes really important to kind of communicate these things to your children. If we never talk about our financial situations, we may not be optimizing our estate planning. I had a recent circumstance where a client called to let me know an in-law had passed away and assets were going to pass down to the kids. And one of those children absolutely did not need the money at all. So that person wanted to disclaim. They said, I don't want it. Now, the person who's disclaiming doesn't get to decide where the money goes. It was the person who was giving it. So in this case, let's say mom passed away. Mom said in her will, you know, everything to my four kids evenly. And if that's all they said, and if one dies, it goes to the other three children. If I disclaim it, it goes to the other three children. If mom says, to my four children per stirpes, or to their survivor, to my kid's survivor, then I could disclaim. I do a disclaimer, and there's certain rules around that. And then my share would go to my children, because that's what mom said. Mom said, if I have died, if I have not survived her, it's going to go to my children. And by disclaiming, you're kind of saying, you know, it's almost like you passed away. And then it could go to the children. So that's why it's kind of important to have these discussions. So I will talk about that more next week. Another big, big transition, I think, are job transitions. And it could be all for the good, or it could be all for the panic, meaning all for the good, you decided to change jobs or get that next great job. But there are times when it's not our decision, it's not our choice, and we're kind of forced into either early retirement or we're laid off, and now we have to scramble. So when we talk about jobs, whether you're getting a job for the first time or looking for a new job, some of the things you want to make sure you're paying attention to are comparing the job benefits, in essence, to make sure you're comparing apples to apples. When we want to consider what job we're going to take, especially if we have options, we want to look at, obviously, the compensation, of course, but you have to look under the hood of that as well. It's not always just about the compensation dollar amount they say they're going to pay you in a salary. It could be what other benefits are they giving you? Are you getting a match on an, first of all, do they even offer a retirement plan at work? Are they matching the retirement plan? So let's pretend one job is going to pay you $50,000 and the other job is going to pay you $50,000. But company A is going to give you a 3% match on your retirement contributions, or an automatic 3% match. Already, I'm going to make more money in that scenario. And job A is going to pay for half my medical insurance. And I find out job B doesn't have a retirement plan or doesn't do a match, and they don't contribute to the healthcare benefits, health insurance. Well, then job A obviously looks much better. The same pay, but much better benefits. So you want to pay attention to that. But there could also be other factors such as commute time. Am I having to commute? Do I drive an hour for one job? Do I drive 5 minutes for one job? That factors into the compensation as well, in essence, because it's going to be more money out of pocket if you're commuting. What about promotion potential? You want to pay attention to that. Company stability, flexibility in hours, stock options. Put it in an Excel spreadsheet. And if you don't have Excel or don't know how to use it, then get out a little piece of paper and draw a line down the middle of the page and start, you know, comparing the benefits. That could make a big difference in your job transition, so that you're not surprised by, gosh, I thought I was making the same amount of money or a little bit more, and I'm actually not. You don't want surprises. You want to be in front of those. Folks, we are at the halfway point. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and they'll bring it in. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
We are talking about life transitions tonight. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. One more comment on jobs. You also want to make sure that when you are working, that you're paying attention to your contributions that could be put on your resume. So I just had this conversation with someone, and I said, I have always worked jobs as if I'm looking for the next job, such that I want to show accomplishments in case I need to put something on a resume. So if you go to work and you face your job every day as, what can I contribute? What can I do? Where can I make a difference? Number one, while you're working, people see it, people notice it, and you could be more apt for promotion. You could be more apt for salary increases, better salary increases, because you're performing and you're showing how you're adding value, and that is valuable to companies. And then, of course, it serves a second purpose, that if you do decide to look for another job, you have a resume builder, because you've gone to work and you've said, what accomplishments can I show? What can I, you know, put on my resume to show where I added value? And I've just always thought like that. I've always worked like that. And it's worked out really well for me. So that is my recommendation as far as jobs. Because that helps, again, when we talk about transitions and transitioning to a different job or a new job, that could be really valuable. And, you know, it's just really fulfilling as well as you're working to show that you're contributing and making a difference wherever it might be. Also, as far as other things to pay attention to in jobs and when we talk about transitions, if you are working for a company that potentially gives you a stock option, we don't see that as much as we used to years ago. Stock options, if it's a big company, they may offer stock options as an incentive for your performance. And they might say, hey, you did a good job. You can buy this stock at this price. And there's usually a grant date, an exercise date, an expiration date. You want to pay attention to that as well, if that is available to you. Because if those stocks, if the value of the stock goes up, then you're making money. We call that in the money. And then you would want to watch when it's eligible to, when it vests and you can sell it. You want to pay attention to that, particularly if you're leaving work and we talk about job transitions, what might you be leaving on the table if there are stock options that have not vested yet? Or if you are eligible for something called restricted stock units, which is a different than a stock option. A stock option, you're actually paying some tax-favored or price on it, a lower price on it, hopefully, if it's in the money. A RSU is like an award that says, hey, in 3 years, you're going to, if you've worked here 3 years, in my example, the vesting might be 3 years. There could be different vesting schedules. And we give you these, you know, 100 shares of stock today. You hope in 3 years the value of that stock is higher. And then you get to, it kind of comes to you automatically. And it can come to you in stock, or you typically can also just ask for it, you know, in a sale. They could just sell it and give you the cash. You want to be aware of that. If you're leaving jobs, what might you be leaving on the table as far as restricted stock units or stock options? Also, stock could be in a 401k. We call that, there's a tax-favored benefit on that. It's called net unrealized appreciation, NUA. Just be very careful if there is employer stock. I'm going to talk about that as we talk about retirement transitions. So that is something you have to kind of put a little asterisk if you're someone who has stock and employer plan. I'll talk about that in a minute. So jobs, transition, make sure you're comparing apples to apples, benefits, you know, commuting time, promotion potential, retirement, matching on retirement accounts, or automatic safe harbor contributions an employer might give you. Maybe there's some profit sharing. Some plans might have profit sharing but never pay out a profit sharing benefit to the 401k, but it could be there. Health benefits, of course. Health benefits are one of the most costly expenses we have, I think, when we're working. It's not income taxable to us through the employer plan, so we do get a little bit of a benefit if we're buying our health insurance through our employer. It's not going to be included in taxable income, so that's great. But what is the cost of it? And is the employer paying for part of it? Also something to pay attention to, if you are married, one spouse, if you're both working, one spouse may have better benefits than the other. So when you're transitioning jobs, make sure you're paying attention to that so that you don't miss a window. Typically, there are what we call life events that could trigger the ability for someone to make a change when they otherwise would not be able to. Whether it's picking up insurance, dropping insurance, or like having a baby and now you're going to have dependent care, you know, open enrollment's all done, you think you can't get flexible spending accounts anymore. Flexible spending accounts is a way to defer income into a special account used for dependent care expenses, and you don't have to pay income tax on that either, which is really great, at least for federal purposes. And usually you have to sign up for that during open enrollment, but if you didn't, because maybe you didn't even have a baby, or you've had a change in life circumstances, you could have a qualifying event that does allow you to do that now. So pay attention to that. That could also be one of those transition stages that could make a difference in putting more money away tax-free if you have dependent care expenses coming up that you didn't before or hadn't planned for. A lot of people don't realize they can have a life event that allows them to make some of those changes that we have in open enrollment that we otherwise, you know, would have missed out. Because if you don't do it in open enrollment, you don't get to do it. That's not the case in a life event. So be aware of that. Let's talk about some of those transitions I mentioned in retirement. Best time to prepare for retirement, obviously, is before you want to retire. And usually before you come in and say to me, I want to retire tomorrow, because we don't have as much of a runway then. And I hear that more often than one would really think. Yes, when would you like to retire? I'd like to retire tomorrow. Well, you know, it might look like you might not be able to retire tomorrow. How does 5 years sound? So just kind of start paying attention to that a little sooner. And in fact, remember, how did we start the show? We started the show talking about young adults becoming adulting. That is the best time to start establishing the discipline of saving and saving for retirement. The sooner you do it, the more compounding you have, the better options you'll have, and you'll get into some really good habits saving early. I like to always tell people, spend less than you think you have. You know, spend less than you have, buy less than you need, you know, buy used cars, you know, buy a house less than you can afford, that type of thing. Go to the restaurant, everybody gets water. It's my favorite story with my children. Kids, what do you want to drink at the restaurant? Water, 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 water. So it starts with good early habits. So prepare as early as you can for retirement by saving as much as you can. You know, it makes a big difference too when you kind of set it and forget it, like you might do with working and a 401k, where you can just say 10% of my salary or 5% of my salary. Kind of get in the habit of doing that. If you have to start with 1% because that's all you can afford at this point, the next year you try to do 2%, the next year 3%, or at least try to do as much as you can to get the match. If there is a match, sometimes employers will only put money in the retirement account for you if you put it in. You really want to take advantage of that. That is free money. You also want to pay attention when you are thinking about retirement. What are your cash flow resources going to be when you do retire? So again, if you're thinking about this before you retire, you have more options. What are my cash flow resources going to be? you know, your neighbor might have different resources than you do. They might have a pension. You might not have a pension. They might have a big 401k. You may or may not have a big 401k or IRA, whatever it might be. Social Security, their Social Security benefit could be higher than your Social Security benefit. If there's, you know, two spouses, they could have a better Social Security benefit than you if you're a single spouse. So you want to make sure you understand what your cash flow resources are and what your needs are. Now, sometimes one might think you won't need as much money in retirement. You're not going to have taxes as much in taxes. You're not going to be putting money into your retirement account, so you don't need as much money as you were making. But it all depends what happens. Sometimes I've seen people retire, and then they're looking around the house, and they see all these renovations and improvements they have to make. All of a sudden, they have free time, and they start wanting to travel, and they want to travel the world. Their expenses technically could even go up. You need to have an idea of what cash flow resources you're going to have and what expenses you're going to have. You know, when we're in front of it enough and people aren't sure whether they can do it, I say practice for a year. See if you can live on that budget you think you're going to have when you retire. So if you're, you know, making $120,000 when you're working, and net of tax, you're taking home, I'm going to make up a number, you know, 75, and you're spending 75. Well, that tells me when you retire, that's the net amount, 75. When you retire, are you going to have 75,000 coming in? Well, if your Social Security is 25, you're going to have to make up 50 from somewhere, and you have maybe a pot of money in your retirement accounts. Are you going to be able to generate the amount of money you need from that pot to see you through those cash flow needs? It'll all depend on the kind of rate of return you're getting on the investments, and if you're taking more than that anticipated amount. And financial advisors have calculators to kind of ballpark all of this. I just was talking with someone earlier today, and you know, we can pull out our little HP 12C calculators and say, okay, if this is the present value of your money today, for this number of years at this rate of return, with either zero money left, or maybe you want to leave some money to someone, 500,000 left, we can solve for the amount of money that you can take out each month. And those are just using kind of like an average rate of return. That doesn't factor in that very simple calculation. It does not factor what we call like Monte Carlo simulations, where what if we're in the worst market? What if we're in the best market? It's just kind of like a ballpark type of number, kind of a benchmark a little bit. So you want to have an idea of what your cash flow needs would be, but where are you going to get the resources to fund that cash flow? So again, we're navigating these transitions. If we're in front of them, we have more options and we can plan for them. You know, I've had to say to people, you can't retire. I don't think it's going to work. You know, it might be a couple more years. Now, one might say there's so many factors that could be impacted, but I think it's always better to go a little bit conservative in these kind of ballparking. So, for example, someone might say, well, you know, I don't think I'm going to live that long, so I only need my money to last 10 years because mom and dad, everybody, they all passed away at, you know, 65. My next question would be, did mom and dad smoke? Did mom and dad drink? Did mom and dad, you know, have a healthy lifestyle? You know, if I'm sitting in front of someone who looks like the picture of health and looks 10 years younger than they are, you may not have the same life expectancy as your parents. You may live longer. So we kind of have to plan for that. And some of that planning will include if you have to transition to, you know, assisted living, memory care, nursing care, and that too can be, you know, be a potential depending on family history. So you want to also make sure you understand that. Where does that come from? If you can and you have access to that. Sometimes parents don't tell us everything. I'm at my last break, and I'll finish up on retirement transitions and talk a little bit about estate planning and death transitions. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. As Margaret mentioned, you can catch us on the WDIY app and many streaming services as well. We are talking about life transitions. We've moved from life transitions, job transitions, retirement. I want to make sure I hit a bunch of these bullets when we think about the retirement transitions. Remember, plan before you retire. I usually like to see at least 5 years before you think you're going to retire to make sure you have your ducks in a row, and it gives you a chance to practice, maybe, you know, saving a little bit more, a little bit extra, maybe taking care of some of those renovations or buying the new car while you're still working, while you still have cash flow coming in and have those resources. So think about it ahead of time. I want to mention, though, that there's things you should think about before you leave the job. That might be if you have a flexible spending account, you need to spend it before you retire. Flexible spending accounts are lose it or use it, use it or lose it. And sometimes if you don't use it before you leave work, it's gone. It stays with the employer. Health savings accounts, they go with you. So that's good. That's good to know if a health savings account was available to you through a high deductible health plan at some point. Pension options, get your pension options. I'll tell people if they're afraid to say something at work thinking, oh, they're going to think I'm going to quit, I've got to be careful. You say to HR, I need to see a pension illustration. My financial advisor is asking for it. We're doing projections or something like that. You could do that. But quite often nowadays, the pension illustrations are also online for some plans. And you need to understand your pension options because it might be a single life, joint life, term certain, survivor benefits. You really have to pay attention to if you're in a relationship. Very important to understand your pension options because you might also have a lump sum option rollover in that pension. So you have to be very, very careful. Big, big decision on pension options. Rollover options, usually you can roll over a 401k or a 403b to an IRA rollover. You want to also be careful how you navigate that. If you have employer stock in a retirement account, there's special tax treatment. I mentioned that earlier, NUA. Be very, very careful and cautious, always in front of your decision. And also those stock options I mentioned earlier, if you need to do anything with those. All right. So those are some bullets on the retirement transitions, making sure you understand what's available to you. If you're pre-age 65 and retiring, it means you're going to have to get health insurance somewhere else. Typically your employer plans aren't going to cover you after you retire. But particularly pre-age 65, you may have to go on the marketplace. We call that penny.com in Pennsylvania. You may be able to go on a spouse's health insurance, but you're going to need health care coverage. You want to make sure you're navigating that and understanding the cost of it and planning for it, because there could be planning opportunities available to you if you might manage your income such that you could qualify for some advanced premium tax credits on the health care if you've bought it through the exchanges. Once you're 65 or approaching 65, I should say, typically 2 to 3 months before you turn 65, you want to notify Medicare that you're going to be going on Medicare. If you're not working anymore and you're going to switch over to Medicare, you need to notify them, because if you're not collecting Social Security yet, you're going to have to make an arrangement to pay for the Medicare. Write a check for it. If you're already receiving Social Security or plan to collect Social Security at 65, then the payments for the Medicare premiums would come out of your Social Security payment automatically. You still would have to file or obtain supplemental health insurance if you're going on Medicare Part B. Dan Banks and I from Dan Banks from Silver Crest Insurance had a show on that several weeks ago talking about your Medicare options. Could be Medicare Part B with a supplemental plan or Medicare Advantage. So you want to make sure you know what you're going to do and how you're going to take it and how you're going to pay for it. So that's the medical you want to make sure you have. Now, as we move into those retirement years, we also think about where are we going to live? Are we going to stay in our house? If we stay in our house, what kind of improvements or renovations might be needed? What am I going to stay in my house long term? Do I want to make it, aging in place type of improvements? Maybe I want to put a master bedroom and a bathroom on the first floor because I love my house so much I want to stay there forever. You want to plan that out and think about it and make sure you understand the cost of it. Because once you retire, if you think you're going to get a home equity loan or a line of credit, it may not be as easy for you to do that, or even getting a mortgage or a refi to afford these things. Once you're retired, if you don't have that same income on your tax return, you may not be able to have that as a resource. So you want to think about these transitions again ahead of time to see if you maybe need to establish the line of credit before you retire or refi before you retire. Take the money out for home equity before you retire while you still have that income on the tax return. It just bothers me to no end when I might have a client who has maybe millions of dollars in a retirement account, doesn't need to take any money out, and the bank will say, well, you have to see income on the tax return. So the client's forced into having to take a distribution from an IRA account to show that they have income on their tax return to pay when they might actually have, you know, cash in the bank. So it's not as simple as it used to be. Make sure that you're paying attention to those things. Now, maybe the living situation for you isn't staying in your own home. Maybe you're thinking about moving to a 55-plus community as part of this transition. Don't think it's going to be cheaper. Quite often, these facilities are way more expensive than where you may currently be living because they are providing a community. They will have a clubhouse, they'll have a pool and tennis courts, and maybe they'll have a gate at the front, and it's like a social club, these 55 plus communities, and they think, well, people are willing to pay more to be part of them. Quite often you buy the house and they take care of the grounds and, you know, for like an HOA fee. And so you want to think about, if you're going to do that, what does that look like? How do you finance that? Maybe it really is just you selling your house and taking the proceeds and buying in, and it's an even match. But quite often it could be actually, you know, a step up and it could cost more. How are you going to fund it? Especially if you're retired. Maybe you're going to go into a continuing care community or a life care community where you may have, health issues in your family. Maybe everyone in the family has had strokes in the past or dementia, and you're really worried about that. And if you have children, you don't want your children to have to take care of you. You don't want to be a burden. So you're considering one of these continuing care communities. Number one, it costs a decent amount of money to get in because usually once you buy in, it's not... they won't kick you out if you end up needing medical care. You have to make sure, you know, what applies to the facility that you're entering into. There are going to be options on the buy-in. The buy-in may be you buy in and then you have a monthly fee, and you're not owning the unit you're buying into. You're buying into the community. You don't own the unit, and then you have a monthly fee. But quite often, these facilities will also offer a refundable option. And if you pay more, then you can get a refund after, you know, when you die, your family can get a refund. There's a calculation to that to see if it's worth it. If I'm going to buy in for $400,000 and with no refund, and the refund option is $700,000, that's a whole boatload more of money that I would be giving away to simply get a refund, what might be in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, whenever I die in that facility. So there's a calculation. You want to make sure you understand what would be expected. And also that in these continuing care communities, when you're independent living, the monthly charge might be X. And if you move into the assisted living, it's going to be X plus. And if you move into the memory care or nursing care, it's going to be X plus plus plus. Understand what that is, and would your portfolio support that? Maybe you already thought of all of that and you bought some long-term care insurance. The long-term care insurance may help cover some of those expenses, but they may not even cover all of it. Be aware of that. So in these transitions, folks, I mean, it sounds like common sense, but you'd be surprised how often people don't follow the threads. I always visualize in my head, I actually see this in my head like a quilt, and the threads holding it all together, and you pull one thread and you got to make sure that it's, you know, keeping everything. You got to follow the threads to make sure it all still works with all these different patches in the quilt, all these different options that you might have. So could be refundable, monthly fees, non-refundable, and changing care level, important. And then finally, of course, death. We want to make sure you have your final wishes, whether it's lifetime wishes, meaning if I have a health crisis, do I have someone who can speak for me if I cannot speak for myself? That's called a health care directive. We have powers of attorney. If I can't make financial decisions, do I have someone I can trust to make those financial decisions for me? These are all made while you're, you know, have your faculties, you know, you have cognitive, you know, awareness. Transitions, you do it beforehand. You know, you plan for these transitions. You also want to make sure you understand how your assets are titled. Do you have beneficiary designations? Do you have final burial wishes? Do you want a funeral? Do you not want a funeral? Do you want a, you know, a coffin? Do you want to be cremated? These are decisions that, you know, you can make now, and you could even pay for some of these services before anything happens. And by doing it in front of any crisis or situation, you will, you know, have what you really wanted and what you needed and what your final wishes in essence were. And that includes choosing your executor, choosing your trustee if you have a trust, choosing your power of attorney, or as I mentioned, that healthcare power of attorney, picking and choosing those people who, you know, would follow your wishes, as you've determined. A living will is where you kind of tell people what some of those final wishes might be, as far as, you know, if you end up where you can't speak and you're like on a feeding tube or something like that, where they can remove life-saving measures or do not resuscitate kind of directives. You want to do that, you know, when you can, when you have the ability and the faculties to be able to do that. So make sure that you have considered that in your estate planning with your attorney. Talk through what your desires are and make sure those efforts are coordinated, that you coordinate your will wishes and your trust wishes with your asset titling and your beneficiary designations. I recently worked with someone who thought they would give a percentage to their cousins, a percentage of their will to the cousins. And when I gave her the numbers, she was shocked. She was like, oh, well, I never intended for them to get that much. And so once we saw the numbers, she reworked them a little bit. And that was a really important exercise to go through. And it's more important to do it in front of executing that will. Before you execute all the documents, know what it was going to look like based on today. And then, you know, once you have the documents in order, you can always adjust them and change them over time. But if you don't do anything now, your assets may not go to the places you want, and your final wishes may not be, put to in action either. Folks, thank you for listening tonight, talking about transitions. If you have questions, you can always send those through yourfinancialchoices.com. I do the best I can to answer those questions. Next week, we're going to talk about gifting and sharing financials with family. I think it's worth kind of having those discussions, and I'll talk about ways that you can address that. Thank you, Bob and Cindy. Thank you, callers. Thank you, James, for being here. Thank you, listeners. Remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.